Good day, and welcome to the Monash IVF Group Fiscal Year 2017 Results Announcement Teleconference. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. James Tidman, Chief Executive Officer, and Mr. Michael Knaap, Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Ashley. Good morning, and thank you for joining us today for Monash IVF Group's FY 2017 full year results. As Ashley said, with me this morning is our CFO, Michael, who will be later stepping us through the detail of our full year numbers and providing some further color around our achievements. I'll be speaking to the slide deck made available on the ASX website and our group website earlier this morning. By way of background, Monash IVF Group is a leading provider of fertility care, tertiary-level women's imaging, and reproductive-related diagnostics, with a network of over 40 IVF clinics, ultrasound practices, and service centers across Australia and Malaysia. Our network includes over 100 doctors, that's both fertility specialists and sonologists, and in excess of 650 scientific, nursing, allied health, and support staff. Our provenance is such that we were there at the very conception of the assisted reproductive technology specialty, having achieved the world's first IVF pregnancy in 1973. We continue to break new ground with improvements in fertility care and women's imaging and diagnostics. Since our conception in the 1970s, over 35,000 babies have been born with our help. Indeed, today, a Monash IVF baby is born every two and a half hours, and one of our patients is scanned the equivalent of every 10 minutes. Monash IVF Group has a strong track record of solid financial performance, with strong CAGRs achieved across the key financial metrics of revenue, EBITDA, and NPAT over the last five years. While FY 2017 has seen a moderation against the long-run trend ARS volume growth rates impacting the business over the past 12 months, we remain confident the underlying fundamentals driving demand for ARS and women's imaging services remain sound, as does in turn our long-run forecast of circa 3% market volume growth in Australia and double-digit market volume growth in Malaysia. Monash IVF Group delivered a respectable operational and financial performance in the 12 months to 30th of June 2017 in the context of what we believe is a short-term softening of trend volume growth rates across the Australian market. NPAT increased 2.9% on PCP to 29.6 million, with EBITDA decreasing marginally by 1.2%, albeit our EBITDA margins remained largely stable. As a result of an 80 basis point decline in the overall Australian ARS stimulated cycle market, Monash's revenue was impacted and fell by 0.9%. Ultrasound revenues softened against PCP in light of a decline in market conditions and volume slippage from a key referrer. However, this decline slowed significantly in the second half relative to H1. Against that, demand for non-invasive prenatal testing increased by over 8% in FY 2017, with nearly 10,000 tests provided to patients over the past 12 months. Our in-house Nest-branded non-invasive prenatal test has built excellent momentum, with in-house testing penetration now at approximately 95%. We continue to maintain a strong balance sheet with improved ROE and ROA of 18.6% and 10.3% respectively. With respect to our full year performance, I'm delighted to confirm we have raised our total dividend to 0.088 per share, an increase of 3.5% on PCP, and the dividend will be fully franked. Looking at our operational highlights for fiscal 2017, the group's Australian IVF market share only marginally declined, demonstrating the robustness and resilience of our premium care offering. That said, our Australian international businesses increased NPAT over the prior corresponding period. Our Australian stimulated cycle market share for the period was 22.4%, a drift of 0.5%. despite industry dynamics suggesting that much of the H2 market growth was driven by low-cost providers and an increasingly evident bifurcation of the ARS market. Importantly, our market share in Victoria increased slightly in Q4 of FY17. Strong cost control and efficient work practices ameliorated EBITDA margin erosion to a mere 10 basis points. We will continue to take advantage of our scale and rolling out best-in-breed processes across our clinic network to drive ongoing operating leverage. Continued investment in science and research demonstrates the group's commitment to leading-edge clinical technology and innovation in the provision of fertility and women's imaging services. With the in-housing of non-invasive prenatal testing, not only have testing volumes increased by over 8% against PCP, but as I mentioned, as of 30th of June 2017, in-house penetration has increased to 95% of all NIPT testing. We're also well advanced on the development testing of an exciting new non-invasive embryo screening technology, which we'll provide further updates on over the course of FY18. Our KL clinic moved into a new state-of-the-art facility in May with excellent feedback from patients and clinicians on the new clinic. The relocation has also allowed us to address the capacity constraints experienced in the old clinic. Here in Australia, we converted and rebranded our previously named Bump Clinic in Mossman to a full-service premium clinic, with our three clinics in Sydney now operating under the Monash IVF brand. Importantly, recent independent market research demonstrates Monash IVF brand awareness and patient consideration has further increased over the last 2 years, attesting to the strength of the Monash IVF brand. An ongoing focus for management and the board is succession planning for our clinician workforce. Monash IVF Group has been highly successful in growing a cadre of leading doctors across our network, today comprising 89 fertility specialists in Australia, including over 30 in Victoria. Over the last 12 months, a further 4 new fertility specialists joined Monash IVF. Further to our previous advice to the market, one of our Victorian doctors, Dr. Lynn Burmeister, has agreed to terminate her relationship with the group, effective from next month. Given Dr. Burmeister's 12-month non-compete, we have a lengthy period to mitigate the impact of her departure, and we are focused on providing a seamless transition for patients to continue their care with other Monash IVF doctors. Of note, the 12-month non-compete period in her contract was upheld, really demonstrating the robustness of the company's contractual relationships with its clinicians. On another matter close to my heart, the board, in conjunction with an executive search firm, is progressing the recruitment of my replacement, even though Michael tells me I'm irreplaceable, with an announcement expected to be made on an appointment in Q2 FY18. So let's move on to what we're seeing occurring with treatment volumes across the entire Australian assisted reproductive services market over the last 12 months. The Aussie ARS market softened in FY17 against very strong comps in the prior corresponding period. Industry-wide growth rates in Monash IVF Group's key markets in the period 1st July 2016 to 30th of June 2017 increased only very slightly by 0.2% versus PCP. This is in contrast to a very strong increase of 6.8% in FY16 on PCP. Volatility on a quarter-by-quarter basis was high in FY17, with negative growth in Q1 and Q2, strong positive growth in Q3, and incremental growth in Q4. The strong growth we saw in Q3, we believe, was largely driven by Victoria and Queensland, where low-cost providers have been increasingly active. Importantly, total Australian stimulated cycle volumes declined by 0.8% in FY17 versus PCP, but once again this was against the very strong growth we saw in FY16 versus FY15. That said, the line chart on this slide further highlights the short-term quarterly variations in demand for IVF treatment that we see occurring over time. Importantly, the long-term trend is a positive yield curve, reflecting the strong demographic drivers underpinning our industry. The industry fundamentals of continued absolute growth in the number of women in Monash's core age demographic, a trending increase in maternal age, improving ARS pregnancy success rates, and our expanding range of services and treatment options remain strong. I'll now hand over to Michael to take us through our financial highlights.
Thank you, James, and good morning to everybody. I'm on page 10, which is the P&L page. As James said, there was a slight reduction in revenue, being down 0.9%, predominantly as a result of decline in the full service ARS industry growth rates in the period, which was against very strong comparatives in the prior year. This was, however, partially offset with some pricing growth. In a period whereby there was a softening of ARS industry growth, along with increased competition from low-cost providers, it was pleasing that we were able to still generate a 2.9% growth in NPAT to $29.6 million in the financial year 2017. It is worth noting that the EBITDA margin was relatively stable at 31.6% versus 31.7% in the prior year, with the key driver being sustainable cost control initiatives. Furthermore, the NPAT margin expanded to 19.1% from 18.4% in the prior year. This was primarily due to 27.5% reduction in interest expense as a result of a successful refinance of total debt facility in June 2016, which was on more favourable terms. This included reduced debt margins and a lower underlying interest rate. If we move on to slide 11, the revenue analysis. The overall ARS market growth in the period had the potential to deliver an additional 2.6 million more revenue. However, the markets where this growth occurred in both Victoria and Queensland was likely to be attributable to growth in the low-cost market, a market that we don't participate in Victoria, and have a very modest representation in Queensland. As a result, our overall market share declined, with another contributing factor being a low-cost competitor pricing in South Australia. We were able to offset some of the loss in revenue as a result of ARS pricing growth of $2.3 million at an average price increase of approximately 2%, across the various ARS services we provide, and also volume growth in the international market of Malaysia. There was, however, a decline in other revenue as our ancillary services were impacted by the decline in the Australian ARS market. Lower income from low-margin donor work and a soft ultrasound market in New South Wales with some volume slippage from a key referrer also contributed. If we take a look at the segmental earnings on slide 11, domestically the full service ARS industry declined, which contributed to a slight reduction in revenue of 1% to $148.9 million for the reasons previously outlined. Again, it was important to note the EBITDA margin remained relatively stable in the domestic business with 31.2% margin delivered. We had strong ARS patient treatment growth in Malaysia of 10.1%, despite capacity constraints that were alleviated in May through an investment in a new clinic with a significant capacity increase. We only captured 1.3% revenue growth in our KL clinic as a result of the weakening of the Malaysian ringgit against the Aussie dollar during FY17. There was some EBITDA margin expansion to 40.3% versus 39.4% in the PCP as we gained leverage from the incremental volume that was delivered. We continue to view the international market positively with opportunities for strategic growth. We also introduced a new dedicated international business development manager who is active in reviewing international growth opportunities. As we take a look at capital management on slide 13. Our balance sheet strength was maintained during FY 2017, whereby the net debt to equity ratio was 56.3% at 30th June 2017. Net debt increased $5.5 million to $92 million as we supported $20.7 million dividend payments and $6.6 million of CapEx. It's also important to note that $9.5 million of the tax payment was related to financial year 2016. The net working capital also improved primarily as a result of the FY16 tax payment. We have built balance sheet capacity to support strategic growth opportunities and currently have access to debt capacity of an additional $59.5 million. After the refinance of our total syndicated term debt facility in June 2016, we have a blend of 3, 4, and 5 year term debt, with the first tranche not expiring until financial year 2020. All of our capital management metrics are comfortably compliant with our banking covenants. The key metrics are our leverage ratio, currently at 1.88 times at nearly half the covenant, which is less than 3.5 times. Our interest cover is at 14.8 times at nearly 5 times greater than the covenant, which is greater than 3 times. We maintain strong capital return metrics with our return on equity at 18.6% and return on assets at 10.3%. In addition, we declared 4.5 cent fully franked final dividend, which is a 3.5% growth on prior year and a payout ratio of 69.8% at the top end of our policy range. As we take a look at cash flow on slide 14, Monash IVF continues to have excellent cash flow generation and earnings conversion. We generated $46 million in net operating cash flow before tax, with a cash flow conversion of 93.9%, with second half 2017 delivering a 103.5% pre-tax cash flow conversion. Free cash flow declined by $14.5 million, which importantly was impacted by a one-off anticipated corporate tax payment of $9.5 million relating to FY 2016. The other factor that contributed to this was a conversion to monthly corporate tax instalment arrangements during FY 17, which contributed an additional $5.6 million in tax. It's worthwhile noting that in financial year 2018, we will be in a more normalised monthly tax instalment regime that will more reflect our tax expense. The finance activities included the $20.7 million of fully franked dividend payments during the year. We also supported a fairly heavy CapEx program of $6.6 million in FY 2017, geared around a new state-of-the-art clinic in KL, other clinic refurbishments and upgrades, improved new technologies and services for our patients, including non-invasive prenatal testing capability, IT infrastructure and enhancements to patient management systems, whilst also refreshing our equipment. It is worthwhile noting that we made a $525,000 investment into an IVF joint venture in Hobart, Tasmania, branded Fertility Tasmania. We're a 35% minority shareholder. We are certainly pleased with the progress of this business. I'll now hand you back to James to cover off the operational highlights and outlook.
Thank you, Michael. So let's move on to our detailed operational highlights. So as Michael touched on earlier, operationally the Aussie business was impacted by a softening of industry growth rates, with revenue down 1%. All the pricing increases enacted in FY17 have really ameliorated the full volume impact on the business. Strong cost control and a range of operating efficiencies also assisted in offsetting the impact of lower volumes, with EBITDA margin in the Australian business contracting only 20 basis points. On a jurisdictional basis, our Queensland and New South Wales IVF businesses performed solidly, while our Victorian and South Australian IVF businesses were impacted by competition from low-cost providers. Of note, however, our Victorian market share increased slightly in Q4 of FY17. Our Melbourne Ultrasound for Women business performed well over the course of FY17, with the business continuing to grow well. Sydney Ultrasound for Women was impacted by a decrease in scan volumes due to a softening of market volumes in New South Wales and the slippage of volumes from a key referrer. The rate of decline, as I mentioned, however, moderated significantly in the second half. Moving to slide 17. Monash's Australian stimulated cycles declined by 3.1%, with Australian frozen embryo transfers declining by a similar quantum. Cancelled cycles, which represent only a minimal component of our revenue mix, declined by approximately 11%, so it's a positive thing, due to the application of more effective scientific protocols. IVF revenue for stimulated cycle increased by 3%, benefiting from price increases across all service offerings. Our ultrasound scan volumes softened to approximately 75,000 scans for the reasons I mentioned a little earlier. With a quadrupling of our NIPT testing numbers to almost 10,000 tests in FY17, we have now brought this testing in-house to offer a more timely, responsive service to our patients and, of course, to capture the benefit of the full margin of this testing. Our in-house Nest-branded non-invasive prenatal testing continues to build volume momentum and represents best-in-class science in this burgeoning field of first trimester screening. In-house penetration reached 95% in June 2017, a significant lift even from Q3. We've continued to see a strong demand by our patients using embryo screening technology with pre-implantation genetic screening and pre-implantation genetic diagnosis being utilised by 1 in 5 of our ARS patients. We did see a very moderate decline in PGS volumes this year as more targeted use of this technology is being applied in our early adopting clinics, noting how this is being offset by increased take-up in our later adopting clinics. Moving to Australian market share, our stimulated cycle market share in Australia decreased slightly by 0.5% to 22.4% versus PCP. Our stimulated cycle market share in key markets decreased by 0.9% versus PCP. Jurisdictionally, our market share in New South Wales and Queensland remained relatively stable, though our market share in our Victorian stimulated cycles declined primarily due to low-cost providers stimulating growth in the market in H2. Importantly, as we've touched on, this trend reversed in Q4 with Victoria achieving a small increase in market share. Our South Australian market share did slip by 2.6%, again due to pricing intervention from competitors. Our domestic footprint expansion continued over the course of FY17 as we commissioned new ultrasound clinics in Melbourne, Adelaide and the Gold Coast, and additional sonologists joined the group as part of this service expansion. As Michael touched on, we commenced a new joint venture clinic in Tasmania, which is focused on providing fertility services to the greater Hobart community. And our in-house non-invasive testing, our NEST testing, commenced in November 2016 and is now available not just across all of our ultrasound practices, but we're also continuing to see strong uptake from external referrers. Our focus remains very much on our premium service model and the resilience of Monash IVF Group's market share in light of competition from low-cost providers demonstrates that patients are willing to pay for this premium service and indeed our excellent clinical outcomes. Over the course of FY17, we consolidated our branding in New South Wales to our long-standing, highly regarded Monash IVF brand. And in addition, we retooled our low-intervention bump clinic in Mossman to a full-service Monash IVF clinic. So this now gives us 5 full-service clinics across New South Wales. Our MyIVF medium cost brand in the northern suburbs of Brisbane remains a viable part of our overall strategy, albeit modest in its earnings contribution. Our MyIVF clinic allows us insight into the low cost, low intervention, non-premium market segment moving forward. So moving offshore to our international operations in Malaysia, KL Fertility continues its growth trajectory with revenues up 1.3%. And stimulated cycles up almost 12% on PCP. Our newer fertility specialists in KL continue to build their volumes in this fast-growing offshore market. We've now relocated the clinic to state-of-the-art new IVF facility with very positive feedback from patients and a strong uptick in volumes since the relocation. And this also gives us the ability to deal with what was previously a capacity-constrained environment in our old clinic. Now we've demonstrated a capability to acquire and grow services in this region. We are continuing to review a number of international growth opportunities, both from our our Asian hub and also in the Northern Hemisphere, where a number of ARS assets are expected to come to market in the forthcoming 12 to 18 months. To ensure we are very much on the front foot with such opportunities and to take advantage of them, we've recruited a dedicated international business development manager to assist Michael and I in this sphere. So let's move to our full year outlook for fiscal 18. Monash IVF Group remains well positioned to continue to grow our top line and earnings in FY18 and beyond through strong underlying demand fundamentals for ARS treatment and women's imaging services, through leveraging our reputation for delivering leading success rates in concert with our highly respected doctor group, through a clear strategy focusing on our premium services and brands, through effective cost management and leverage via our increasing scale, and finally through our acquisitive domestic and international growth strategy. So on this basis, we anticipate reported FY18 NPAT will be broadly in line with FY17. We expect market growth initiatives, effective cost control, and well-developed patient transition strategies will offset any downside risk of a doctor departure in Victoria. We note at this stage there's been no apparent reversion to ARS industry growth rates to the long-term market trend growth rates in the first 2 months of FY18. Our outlook is underpinned by our focus strategy for this year and indeed beyond, namely continuing to develop and make available industry-leading science technology for the benefit of our patients, pursuing opportunities to increase our scale and market position in reproductive and women's health, and a focus on our premium fertility and women's imaging brands while leveraging cross-selling opportunities. So in closing, Monash IVF Group has continued its track record of sustained financial performance, as evidenced by NPAT growth of 2.9% on prior year, despite a challenging industry environment. With this challenging backdrop, we saw a very modest market share decline in our Australian business. We mustn't, however, lose sight that the fundamental demand drive industry remains sound and unchanged. Monash IVF Group continues to occupy a leading position with a deep, long-standing commitment to science and innovation to benefit our patients. Our view is unchanged that the forecast trend stimulated cycle growth is expected to be approximately 3% per annum going forward. As we move into fiscal 2018, we continue to review acquisition opportunities that meet our investment criteria, which will provide further ability to scale up our operations. We've reaffirmed our clear strategic and market position as a premium provider, and our continued investment in science will underpin innovative fertility care, market-leading success rates. Our expectation, as I mentioned, at this point is our FY18 reported NPAT will be broadly in line with FY17. So with that said, I'll bring to a close the formal part of the presentation. And Ashley, Michael and I are happy to move to Q&A.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset and make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach your equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. And our first question is from David Stanton with CLSA. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much for taking my question and good morning. I wonder if you could explain to us the issues that you're seeing in South Australia and whether we think we should think that they are continuing or they're likely to sort of dissipate going forward.
Yeah, morning, Dr. Dave. So when we think about our South Australian business, you know, we've had a long presence in that marketplace and we have moved from really what was a duopoly to a market with at least one additional provider. So we're seeing the impact of that in terms of our market share. I mean, our view is that market share and where we stand now has really stabilised. So, I mean, I'd like to think that what you've seen in FY17 is, in my view, a representation of where our market share should fall going forward. I mean, we'll continue, obviously, to look at leveraging improvements in our science. We'll continue to leverage at least two new doctors who we've brought into the business there over the last 12 months to assist us in driving volume and trying to build that market share there. But I think FY17 is, you know, probably a good bellwether for how things will look going forward.
Thank you. And just to change topics, have you seen any scientists from your operations or perhaps others, if you've heard around the market, leaving to, or planning to leave to follow Dr. Burmeister?
Short answer is no, Dave. I mean, when you think about the team of embryologists that we have, not just in Victoria but across our broader network, there are a range of reasons why they choose to work with us. They work with us because we give them access to industry-leading technology. I mean, that's what makes their socks go up and down. They work with us because there is a camaraderie and a real sense of teamwork given our scale. And they work with us because we work in concert with a number of the leading universities to continue to improve the technology and the scientific protocols that we have in our laboratories and that we then extend to our patients. So those type of features are generally unique to larger operators, and as a result, my expectation is that our scientists will stay sticky to the organisation.
Thanks very much.
And our next question is from Sean Laman with Morgan Stanley. Go ahead.
Good morning, James. Good morning, Michael. Thanks for taking my questions. Could I ask about the four new specialists in the Victorian business? Could you give us a guide on where they came from and maybe the average weighted duration that they've worked in the business over the last fiscal year?
Yeah. So, morning, Sean. The four new specialists that I alluded to are across the business. One of them
right.
has come into the Victorian business. And, I mean, as we've touched on before, one of the appealing features of Monash is that we have several training positions available across our clinic network. These are training positions which give OBGs the opportunity to undertake subspecialist training as a CREI. What that allows us to do then is to build a succession plan because there are only a handful of these training positions across the entire country. And one of the additional doctor who came into our Victorian business came up through that specialist training position. And we'll continue to use that channel going forward as a way to succession plan some of our more mature, more experienced specialists as they leave the business.
Okay. Thanks, James. And I'm just thinking about the key doctor departing in Victoria. Has there been any evidence that there's volume leakage already ahead of the official cessation of employment?
One of the things that we have in our doctor contracts, Sean, is a non-compete restraint provision, which ranges from 12 months to 3 years. And what this is about is really protecting the business and allowing us to retain patient workload if a doctor chooses to leave us. And, I mean, as we've highlighted in the pack, we have been successful in enforcing that 12-month non-compete. And we believe that will be instrumental in ensuring we retain the lion's share of the patient volume that that particular Victorian doctor has undertaken over recent times. So, look, we're not seeing any material slippage of volume or any patients leaving the organisation for treatment elsewhere.
Thank you, James. And just one final one from me, if I may. Just the conversion of the bump clinic. Could you talk us through that and, you know, what sort of gives a sense of any volume changes that have occurred as a result of changes of the way of practice, if that makes sense?
Yes, I was in 31st of December or 1st of January 2017, we converted the low-cost bump clinic into a full-service Monash IVF clinic. As you can imagine, Sean, there's a bit of a ramp-up period that is required as you go through such a significant conversion. And we're starting to see some more positive results now as far as those full-service volumes, and it'll continue to ramp up into FY18. We still did service some of the low-cost patients during that second half of FY17, just due to our commitments to our patients and ensure that we're meeting their needs. But to be honest, low-cost, low-intervention, now the run rates of annualised volume is only going to be about 2% as we've converted that clinic, and the only representation we have from low-cost is in our My IVF clinic in the northern suburbs of Queensland. I think we hit a peak of around 5.6% of total volume. We've clearly made the strategic decision to focus on our full-service IVF premium service offering.
Thank you, gentlemen. That's all the questions I have.
And our next question is from Chris Collos with Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning, Mike. James, just a couple from me. To begin with, just given your outlook for a flat FY18, where is that actually coming from? Is that price or volume related?
So the predominant reason for it is volume related. We're still
we should assume that the 2% price increase will continue. Historically,
yes,
that's what you've had on a yearly basis. Yep.
Yes, but we are currently reviewing our Victorian market to see what sort of implications pricing will have based on, I guess, some structural changes and a departing doctor.
Okay, so there could be a potential for that to go down?
Correct.
Okay. Mike, could you just clarify, what was the revenue on EBIT contribution from the ultrasound this time around?
We don't provide EBITDA on the ultrasound system, but the total revenue was around about 17% of our total revenue for the whole business.
Great. And just perhaps some guidance on CapEx. So you mentioned there was a big investment in KL. What do you think that'll look like this year? And also, just where does the tax rate now stand?
The normalised CapEx for our business is probably around that $5 million per annum on a business-as-usual basis. If you look at our tax rate, you've seen a reduction in our tax rate to 28%. And that's as a result of us being more mature in claiming the R&D tax concessions and capturing that information. So I would expect that number to be relatively comparable to 28% as we move forward.
Great. Just lastly, the low-cost service offerings, from where you're standing, do you think they're actually creating a new market or they're actually taking market share from existing premium providers?
Yeah, look, our view and our observation is we are, I mean, I use the term, we're seeing a bifurcation of the market. We believe it is a different type of patient who is availing themselves of low-cost services. Clearly, they're more price and cost conscious, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but they are less discerning about their choice of provider, i.e., our patients select our clinics and our doctors because they get their choice of doctor and they get access to the advanced technologies like pre-implantation, genetic screening, donor work, etc. So, you know, it's a long way of saying we do believe it is primarily a different market segment which is being serviced by the low-cost providers.
Great. That's it from me. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Chris. And our next question is from David Stanton with CLSA. Please go ahead.
Thought I'd be cheeky and ask some more of things no one else will. I wonder if you could give us an idea of, you know, the issues in F17 in New South Wales ultrasound, and again, you know, we've seen a decline that you've called out in volume terms. Should we be thinking, you know, F18 should see that scale of decline, or is it going to get a little bit better?
We expect it'll moderate, Dave. So we did see that volume slippage as a key referrer discontinued sending work in our direction. What we've done there is identified a number of new referrers to effectively backfill that work. And what we're also finding, Dave, is the non-invasive prenatal testing has acted as a real draw card to get new referrers sending patients in our direction. So it's been a very effective platform for us to build a dialogue, but also offer a comprehensive screening service. So the blood test plus an early dating scan, and then what we tend to see is patients will then stay with us for the second and third trimester as well.
Very good. And finally, could I ask why you've seen the decline in pre-implantation genetic screening versus PCP?
Yeah, look, one, because our volumes drifted slightly in FY17 versus FY16, so there's that absolute effect.
Mm-hmm.
But the other reason is we are seeing more selective use of particularly PGS by one of our early adopting clinics. And, you know, essentially what we're seeing is that for patients who are younger than about their mid-30s, they don't get the same utility from this screening technology as patients who are older. So we're seeing less usage in that early adopting clinic in patients of a lower maternal age. Now, having said that, Dave, I expect we will, as we see penetration increase across our later adopting clinics, we'll see an increase in both absolute terms, but also in terms of penetration as we come into FY18.
Understood. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
And once again, that is star one to ask a question. And our next question is from Andrew Muchaka from Flinders Investment Partners. Please go ahead. Hello, Andrew. Your line is open.
James, just in terms of your commentary around the first 2 months of this financial year, did you observe growth in your key markets? Obviously, the PCP was very weak. I understand it's not back to the 3% level, but what have you observed?
Look, there's been variability across the different jurisdictions, Andrew. So, you know, we commentated on growth that we saw in the Victorian and Queensland markets. I'm talking about the overall market here. So growth in the Victorian and Queensland markets in the latter part of FY17, we are seeing that growth in the overall market continue in those two jurisdictions. Our view is much of that growth is being driven by the relatively new entrant low-cost operators. And so, accordingly, with this bifurcation of the market, we're not seeing the same level of growth in our business.
Just taking that a bit further, previously when the low-cost operators did move into New South Wales, and we've probably touched on this before and sort of leads off from the previous commentary, that led to the overall pie growing, and obviously we've observed that. And that allowed your growth rates to maintain that 2 to 3% level over time. But I'm just wondering, have you noticed any of the patients that have come to Monash are maybe patients not suitable for the low cost? What I mean by that is they go down that path and then they're not suitable for low cost or low intervention type testing, and they find their way to your place. Is that sort of increasing?
Andrew, anecdotally, we do see some up-referral of patients from low intervention to our full-service clinics. What is often the case, though, is these are patients who otherwise wouldn't have been able to afford or would have struggled to afford full service. So we don't see strong up-referral. But having said that, the low intervention segment is still a relatively new segment. I mean, granted, it's been operating in New South Wales for three years now, but it's relatively new in some of the other geographic jurisdictions. So I think the jury is still out on whether in the future, once it becomes more established, we might see greater up-referral into our full-service clinics.
Okay, thank you for that.
And our next question is from Lisa Fedorenko with Montgomery. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Just a quick question. You've mentioned the volume slippage from a key referrer a number of times. I was wondering if you could give us some more color as to the reasoning behind that and how key that referrer was.
Yeah, sure. So look, that key referrer is a competitor IPF provider. And look, we imagine the rationale behind that is doctors from that key competitor had less of an appetite to refer patients onto Safwa after we acquired that, Sydney Ultrasound, after we acquired that business. I'll turn to Michael here, but the impact in terms of scan volumes has been modest.
Yeah, the impact's probably been around 3% or thereabouts, but certainly the decline in the volume for that particular provider has reduced. I guess one of the other factors that may have impacted it too is that we did use that provider for NIPT testing. We've now converted all that volume to our Centre of Excellence in South Australia, so that's had an impact as well.
Okay.
But I go back to my point, which is we are seeing, you know, a strong uptake from new referrers in the New South Wales marketplaces. We strongly market our Nest NIPT offering.
Thank you. It appears there are no further questions at this time. Mr. James Tiedemann, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay, well, look, thank you all for your participation over the last hour or so, and we look forward to seeing a number of you over the course of the next few weeks. Thank you.
Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.